Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am in Ezekiel chapter 12, which I will entitle Judah's Captivity Symbolized. We begin in Ezekiel 12, verse 1. Then the word of the Lord came to me, saying. When was that word? Well, the date must be somewhere between Ezekiel 8:1 and Ezekiel 21. Ezekiel 8:1 says, in the sixth year I was sitting in my house. Ezekiel 20, verse 1 says, in the seventh year I was entertaining elders who came to sit in front of me. Well, the sixth year is the sixth year of the captivity of Elijah, and he was taken captive in 597 with King Jehoiachin. So 597 minus 6 years is 591. So Ezekiel 8:1 was somewhere around 591, maybe 592. Ezekiel 20, verse 1 is in the seventh year, and so 597 minus 7 is 590, so that prophecy was somewhere around 591 or 590, or a year later. So all of these prophecies that we're talking about here are very close to the beginning of the siege, which was 588, just 2, 3, 4 years later. And the end of the siege to the destruction of Jerusalem by Babylon, by Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, was 586, just about 3 or 4 years later. So the time is very easy to ascertain. So reading now from verses 1 through 6 of Ezekiel 12, we read this. Then the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, you live in the midst of the rebellious house, who have eyes to see but do not see, ears to hear but do not hear. For they are a rebellious house. Therefore, son of man, prepare for yourself baggage for exile, and go into exile by day in their sight. Even go into exile from your place to another place in their sight. Perhaps they will understand, though they are a rebellious house. And bring your baggage out by day in their sight as baggage for exile. Then you will go out at evening in their sight as those going into exile. Dig a hole through the wall in their sight and go out through it. Load the baggage on your shoulder in their sight, and carry it out in the dark. You shall cover your face so that you cannot see the land, for I have set you as a sign to the house of Israel. Now in verse 2, God addresses Ezekiel as son of man, and as I have said so many times before, that is the title that Jesus called himself by almost exclusively in the New Testament. It was a messianic title taken from Daniel 7:14. Where Jesus was called the Son of Man, the Messiah was called the Son of Man. And so we ask the question, well, why would God call Ezekiel the Son of Man? Two theories on that. One is that God wanted to keep Ezekiel humble. Son of means you have the characteristics of. So Ezekiel, you have the characteristics of a man. You are feeble, you are weak, you are ignorant. So don't be getting uppity. The other theory is that God wanted to give Ezekiel a messianic title because Ezekiel is a type. Ezekiel is speaking to a rebellious house. Jesus was speaking to a rebellious house of Jews. Ezekiel was predicting the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem and the city of Jerusalem. Jesus was doing the same thing on the Olivet Discourse when he said, within one generation, not one stone of this temple will be standing on top of another in Matthew 24. And so therefore, Ezekiel is a type of Christ. I prefer that explanation of the phrase son of man. In verse 2, God says, son of man, you live in the midst of the rebellious house. So we already know that the Jews in Jerusalem were a rebellious house. Now, the Jews in exile in Babylon, in whose midst Elijah lived, they were rebellious too. And in fact, as John Gill says, the exiles in Babylon probably thought that the Jews in Jerusalem had it made compared to them because they didn't get carried away. They're still at home and we're not. And so the Jews in Babylon, they're rebellious too. Verse 3, therefore, God continues speaking to Ezekiel, therefore, son of man, prepare for yourself baggage for exile. Now, of course, this is a typical prophetic object lesson that prophets often do. Ezekiel has already done that. Remember when he took his hair and burned a third of it, whacked a third of it with a sword, scattered a third of it to the winds. This was to represent symbolically what was going to happen to Jerusalem. Well, now his play pretend exile here is going to symbolize the same thing. the total captivity that's going to come in 586. The exiles in 597, that was just the first fruits. It was going to get worse. Well, the exiles in Babylon didn't understand that. They had eyes to see, but they didn't see, ears to hear, but they didn't hear. This reminds us of Deuteronomy 29:4. Yet to this day the Lord has not given you a heart to know, nor eyes to see, nor ears to hear. And of course the reason the Lord didn't give them such eyes and ears is because their hearts were hard. They are rebellious. Application point here. You want to see spiritual things? You want to hear spiritual things? You better not be rebellious. You rebel against God, and He's not going to show you a ding-dong thing. Now, the purpose of this enacted exile that Elijah is going to do was so that the exiles in Babylon would see it, and then they would send letters back to Jerusalem and say, this is what the prophet Ezekiel is predicting for you. Now, we can ask, what were their motives in doing that? Probably not good. They're probably saying, this prophet is worse than Jeremiah, always predicting doom and gloom. But of course, some of the people in Jerusalem who still followed Yahweh and understood the words of the prophets, they might understand when they see that. They might say, oh my gosh, we're going to get exiled. And they might start preparing. At the end of verse 3, God holds out the possibility that the visual prophecy might actually do some good. God says, perhaps they will understand. Now, of course, that's perhaps from my point of view. God knew what their response was going to be. He's omniscient. Now, in verse 4, Ezekiel is told to bring his baggage out by day in their sight as baggage for exile, and then he personally was to follow at night in the evening. Now, you might think that there's an apparent conflict here, and there's not. The baggage was to be sent before by day, probably packed up, put outside, and then Ezekiel was to follow at nightfall. The preparations were to be made by day in full sight of everybody, and people would look over there, kind of like the people watching Noah build an ark, and they're saying, Ezekiel, what are you doing? Where are you going? Ezekiel will continue to pack up, get his baggage ready, probably put it outside in front, unless he carried it through the hole in the wall that he dug, I'm not sure, and then Ezekiel would follow. At the end of verse 4, Ezekiel is told to go into exile as those going into exile. Well, a person going into exile is going to be very sad. So we can reasonably speculate here that Ezekiel looked very sad, as if he were going into exile. And so Yahweh continues to speak to Ezekiel in verse 5 and says, dig a hole through the wall in their sight and go through it. And you can imagine the elders of Israel, the people of Israel in exile there, looking at Ezekiel's house near the river Chebar, watching Ezekiel digging a hole through his wall and wondering, what the heck is this crazy prophet doing? Why does he just walk through the front door? Here's what John Gill says concerning this hole. It was an emblem of the city of Jerusalem closely besieged, from which there was no escape. But by digging through this wall, this showed the manner in which Zedekiah made his escape, by the way of the gate between the two walls, which was by the king's garden. This, of course, is told to us in Jeremiah 52, verse 7. I'll read that to you right now. Then the city was broken into, and all the warriors fled. They left the city by night, by way of the gate between the two walls near the king's garden, though the Chaldeans, that's the Babylonians, surrounded the city. Now, that phrase, the gate between two walls, has always caused me trouble. I believe that there was a double wall at the south of Mount Zion near the king's garden, and the gate that was between the two walls was a gate construction consisting of walls and a roof, maybe rooms on top of the gate. That's typically what gates were back then. And so Zedekiah went through that gate construction, more like a hallway, between the two walls as he headed out south to get into the Arab Valley to try to get to Egypt. He didn't make it. He was arrested, caught by the Babylonian army. And so, according to Gill, and Jameson Fawcett Brown agrees with that, this hole is supposed to symbolize Zedekiah fleeing the city of Jerusalem through the wall. I think that's reasonable, because if you're going to go into exile symbolically, why not just walk through the front door? In verse 6, Yahweh continues to speak to Ezekiel and tells him, load the baggage on your shoulder in their sight and carry it out in the dark. You shall cover your face so that you cannot see the land, for I have set you as a sign to the house of Israel. what land can they not see? Or what land is being symbolized here? What land can the people of the exiles not see? Well, there's a couple of options here. The land that could not be seen would be the land of Israel. So when Ezekiel goes through the hole and comes out, he covers his face. He can't see. He can't see his house, which he is leaving, and which symbolizes the land of Israel, which the exiles will be leaving in 586. Now, there's another possibility here as to what land is being spoken of. It could be the land of Babylon, and the prophecy might refer to that great shame and confusion which attended Zedekiah when he fled the city of Jerusalem in 586. He was captured, taken up to Riblah, had his eyes put out, and so he could not see the land into which he was being carried captive because he was blinded. We read in Jeremiah 52:11, then he, that's referring to Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, then he blinded Zedekiah and bound him with bronze chains. The king of Babylon brought Zedekiah to Babylon, where he kept him in custody until his dying day. And so, according to this view, Ezekiel placing that cloth over his face was to symbolize Zedekiah's blindness as he went into exile. Now, I'm not sure which of those two options is best. Not seeing the land, is that the land of Israel? Or not seeing the land, is that the land of Babylon, because Zedekiah couldn't see it? I report it. You decide it. We go now to Ezekiel 12, verses 7 through 14, and this is a long section, so I'll probably break it down as I go. Verse 7, and I did so, Ezekiel did so, as I had been commanded. By day I brought out my baggage like the baggage of an exile. Then in the evening I dug through the wall with my hands. As John Gill says concerning hands, he dug not with an iron instrument with which walls are dug, but with his hand, he having no such instrument with him, and being in haste, and also that it might be done without noise, denoting the suddenness of Zedekiah's flight and the haste he was in, not having time and leisure to take proper instruments with him, he and his men pulled out the stones of the wall with their own hands, and silently made their way through and escaped. Gill is of the opinion that the symbolism refers to Zedekiah's flight, not just the flight of the exiles in general. So Ezekiel goes out in the dark. He carries his baggage on his shoulder. Verse 8, and in the morning the word of the Lord came to Ezekiel, saying, Son of man, has not the house of Israel, the rebellious house, said to you, What are you doing? Well, you can imagine that the leaders of Israel are wondering what the heck is going on. John Gill is of the opinion that the elders of the house of Israel are saying sarcastically, What are you doing? Mocking Ezekiel for apparently acting so idiotically. What are you doing, you fool? The other option is they're asking seriously, What in the world are you doing? I prefer the serious option. I'd be curious to know what he was doing. He's a prophet. Prophets are a little weird. So I think they're asking straight out, What in the world are you doing, Ezekiel? In verse 10, God gives Ezekiel the answer that he is to give to them. Thus says the Lord, say to them, Thus says the Lord, this burden concerns the prince in Jerusalem as well as all the house of Israel who are in it. Now there, God gives an indication that the prophecy is concerning Zedekiah in particular because he says this burden concerns the prince in Jerusalem as well as all of the house of Israel. So it's the prince and the other exiles. But that might be an indication that the hole in the wall refers to Zedekiah going through the hole in the wall in Jerusalem in 586, and that the face covering of Ezekiel refers to Zedekiah's blindness. The prince in Jerusalem, by the way, in verse 10, is obviously referring to Zedekiah, the last king of Judah. Verse 11, God continues talking to Ezekiel, and he says, Say to these people, to the house of Israel, I am assigned to you as I have done, so it will be done to them. They will go into exile, into captivity. Verse 12, and the prince, that's Zedekiah, who is among them will load his baggage on his shoulder in the dark and go out. They will dig a hole through the wall to bring it out. That seems to me that the hole is definitely referring to Zedekiah. Continuing with verse 12, he, that's Zedekiah, will cover his face so that he cannot see the land with his eyes. That would refer, of course, to Zedekiah getting blinded by Nebuchadnezzar. Now notice in verse 12, God says, They will dig through a wall to bring it out. They, plural, Jaggiel says of this plural pronoun, "It seems by this that when the king and his nobles and servants made their escape, they not only went forth between two walls, but broke through one in order to get away, which was done not by the king himself, but by his servants." That's reasonable. Verse 13, Yahweh continues, "I shall also spread my net over him," over Zedekiah, "and he will be caught in my snare. And I shall bring him to Babylon in the land of the Chaldeans, yet he will not see it, though he will die there." The reason he will not see it is because he's blinded, as we can read in Jeremiah 52:11. "Then he," that's Nebuchadnezzar, "blinded Zedekiah and bound him with bronze chains. The king of Babylon brought Zedekiah to Babylon, where he kept him in custody until his dying day." So he died a blinded man in Babylon, just as Ezekiel has predicted here several years in advance. So, to repeat, Ezekiel predicts that Zedekiah will not see the land of Babylon, and he will die there in the land of Babylon. Verse 14, God continues to tell Ezekiel what to tell the Jewish people in exile in Babylon. "And I shall scatter to every wind all who are around him," all who are around Zedekiah, "his helpers and all his troops." That, of course, refers to the disaster in 586. "And I shall draw out a sword after them." The troops that were scattered could either be Zedekiah's bodyguard or maybe Zedekiah's auxiliary troops he had gotten from the Egyptians. He had allied himself with Pharaoh Hophra of Egypt. Doesn't matter. The sword's coming after them. In verse 14, God's sword. God will track down those who fled to Egypt and other countries after the siege of Babylon, even if they escaped being taken captive or killed in 586 when the city went down. God's coming after them anyway. So, more doom and gloom from the prophet Ezekiel. Now, in verse 9, God tells Ezekiel to tell the exiles, "This burden concerns the prince in Jerusalem." This burden. What burden? Well, the burden of knowing that Zedekiah is going to have to dig a hole in the wall, he's going to be blinded and taken into captivity and die in captivity. That would be a burden, as well as all the house of Israel. It's a burden to them too, because they're going to be taken into exile. That's the straightforward way of reading that. However, we of course know that in the Old Testament, prophecies are often called burdens, I guess because they're a burden on the prophet. And so we could translate burden as oracle. "This oracle concerns the prince in Jerusalem." Either way, doesn't really matter. Now let's look a little closer at the end of verse 12. "He," that's referring to Zedekiah, "will cover his face so that he cannot see the land with his eyes." Now, I just assumed that meant because he was blinded. There's some other options on that, though. Let's look at option number one. Zedekiah, having been captured, could cover his eyes with shame at leaving the city, his palace, and all his grandeur. In other words, when he was captured before he was blinded at Riblah, when he was captured in the Arab Valley, he covers his eyes in shame because he can't look at Jerusalem that he's betrayed. Option number two, why did he cover his eyes? So that people might not know and discover who he was, through fear of being betrayed by perhaps a false friend or maybe taken by the enemy. That would be before he got caught by the Babylonians. That's why he would cover his eyes. Option number three is the option I've already adopted, is that he had his eyes put out at Riblah, so that he could not see with his eyes the land he was being carried into. There's a slight problem with that. The phraseology in verse 12 says, "He will cover his face so that he cannot see." That doesn't sound like somebody that's blinded exactly. Sounds like somebody else covered his face, not Zedekiah. Option number four, Zedekiah's first escape out of Jerusalem occurred when Zedekiah put a mask on himself, or some kind of a visor, which would hinder him from seeing the ground he went upon. So he cannot see the soil, in other words, with his eyes, instead of the land of Israel or the land of Babylon. He cannot see the land, see the ground under his feet because of a mask on his eyes. And because of his fright, he couldn't look out beyond that mask, that visor, to see where he was going. I don't think so. I mentioned that for the sake of completeness. I think the first three options are pretty reasonable, but I prefer the idea that Zedekiah was blinded before he went to Babylon. Now, covered his face, you know, he could be so ashamed of being blind, he could have just put his hand over his face or a cloth over his face so people couldn't see his gouged out eyes. And then it would be him covering his face because of his blindness. Now, some scholars have raised a problem here, saying that when verse 12 says that Zedekiah can't see the land because his face is covered, does that contradict Jeremiah 34:3, which reads this way, "As for you, you will not escape from his hand, but are certain to be captured and handed over to him." As for you, Zedekiah, you will not escape from Nebuchadnezzar's hand, but are certain to be captured and handed over to him. You will meet the king of Babylon eye to eye and speak face to face. You will go to Babylon. Well, that is so easy to reconcile. Zedekiah did meet Nebuchadnezzar eye to eye at Riblah before his eyes were gouged out. And he did speak to Nebuchadnezzar face to face at Riblah before his eyes were gouged out. And then his eyes were gouged out. He went to Babylon and couldn't see where he was going. Josephus observes that Zedekiah thought these two prophecies contradicted each other and therefore neither one was true. In other words, that when Jeremiah says that you will see the king of Babylon eye to eye, Jeremiah is speaking to Zedekiah, and Zedekiah says, okay, and then, oh, he hears Ezekiel is saying that I'm going to have my eyes covered and not be able to see the land. Oh, that's a contradiction. Therefore, I don't believe Jeremiah, and I don't believe Ezekiel. Well, I don't know if Josephus is right that Zedekiah actually thought that, but if he did, he was a fool because it's so easy to reconcile. Well, it is from hindsight at least. Maybe Zedekiah didn't realize that the reconciliation was that he was going to get blinded after he saw Nebuchadnezzar. He might not have thought that far ahead, but at any rate, he proved his stupidity and foolishness by not believing in the prophets of God. We go down to Ezekiel 12, verses 15 through 16. Yahweh continues, speaking to Ezekiel, "They will know that I am the Lord when I disperse them among the nations and scatter them through the countries. But I will spare a few of them from the sword, famine, and plague, so that in the nations where they go, they may acknowledge all their detestable practices. Then they will know that I am the Lord." Now, in verse 15, God says that the Jews will be dispersed among the nations. Babylon, of course, consisted of several constituent nations, and so that would take care of that expression. But also, I'm sure people fled Jerusalem. They went to Egypt, not only to Babylon, but also to Egypt, to Media, and Iran, present-day Iran. They went all over the place. Verse 16, "But I will spare a few of them from the sword, famine, and plague." That, of course, would be those who didn't get killed in the siege in 586, but went into exile instead. Now, why did God spare some people from getting killed? So that they could go and repent, acknowledge all of their idolatry, so they could tell people in exile, this is why we're here, this is why we've lost our homes, and this is why our family members have been killed, is because we practiced idolatry, and we're not going to do that anymore, because then they will know that I am the Lord. The "they" there is ambiguous. It could be the Jews who gave up their idolatry while they were in exile, or it could refer to the heathen surrounding the repentant Jews. Now in verse 16, when the scattered Jews acknowledge their idolatry, they could verbally acknowledge their idolatry, but also by the very fact that they were exiles, without saying a word, that would acknowledge that they were idolaters whose gods had failed them. We go now to Ezekiel 12, verses 17 through 20. "The word of the Lord came to me, 'Son of man, tremble as you eat your food, and shudder in fear as you drink your water. Say to the people of the land, this is what the sovereign Lord says about those living in Jerusalem and in the land of Israel. They will eat their food in anxiety and drink their water in despair, for their land will be stripped of everything in it because of the violence of all who live there. The inhabited towns will be laid waste and the land will be desolate. Then you will know that I am the Lord.'" So Ezekiel, or God speaking to Ezekiel, moves to a second visual object lesson, a visual prophecy. Ezekiel is to tremble and shake as he eats his food, and he shudders as he drinks his water. That would be pretty easy to interpret by the Jews in exile there in Babylon. Verse 19, Yahweh says to Ezekiel, "Say to the people of the land." Now this is the land of Babylon now, not the land of Israel. Ezekiel is in exile in Babylon. And Ezekiel is to say, this is what the sovereign Lord says about those living in Jerusalem and in the land of Israel. That land is a different land, the land of Israel. Notice how Ezekiel calls him the sovereign Lord, or actually Yahweh calls himself the sovereign Lord. He's in charge of who gets exiled, who gets killed, who escapes. He's in charge of everything. And he can take care of the nasty Babylonian Empire in his proper time so that the repentant Jews can come back and reestablish the land of Israel, which we will see, of course, at the end of the book of Ezekiel when we get to his second temple vision. Now, God promises Ezekiel that the Jews' land will be stripped of everything in it. Why? Because of the violence of all who live there. That's not talking about the violence of the Babylonians who are attacking Israel. That's talking about the violence of all the people who lived in Judah, which violence actually caused the invasion to come from Babylon. We've mentioned the bloodshed in Jerusalem been prophesied. I don't have a site in front of me right now. Jeremiah talked about it. Ezekiel has talked about it, if my memory serves me correctly. There was not just idolatry. There was people killing people in Jerusalem. We go now to Ezekiel 12, verses 21 through 25. The word of the Lord came to me, Son of man, what is this proverb you have in the land of Israel? The days go by, and every vision comes to nothing. Say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. I am going to put an end to this proverb, and they will no longer quote it in Israel. Say to them, the days are near when every vision will be fulfilled, for there will be no more false visions or flattering divinations among the people of Israel, but I, the Lord, will speak what I will, and it shall be fulfilled without delay. For in your days, you rebellious house, I will fulfill whatever I say, declares the sovereign Lord. Now, God is not finished speaking to the exiles. He gives another word in verse 21. Apparently, Ezekiel's two object lesson prophecies didn't have much effect upon these dullards. Now, apparently, a proverb had developed in the land of Israel. Oh, you prophets, you keep talking about Jerusalem is going to be destroyed. Well, we're not destroyed. We're still here. Your visions are worthless. They never eventuate. They all come to nothing. Now, that would, of course, really refer to Jeremiah. And if you think about it, Jeremiah is prophesying before the first exile, before the 597 exile. He's also prophesying before the 586 destruction of Jerusalem. But apparently the people just said, well, you know, it was unfortunate, a setback, but we're still here. And God says, I'm going to stop that nonsense. I'm going to stop that proverb. So Ezekiel, you go tell these doubters that the days are near. Remember, this prophecy has been given around 591, 590. The siege is going to begin in 588. The days are near. The siege is going to be finished in 586. So the visions of destruction of Jerusalem will be fulfilled. And verse 24, Yahweh says, there will be no more false visions or flattering divinations among the people of Israel. Flattering because the false prophets would say to Zedekiah, you got it made, Zedekiah. Nothing's going to happen to you. You're the king. Let's look at some examples of these false visions. Jeremiah 17:15. Hear how they keep challenging me. Where is the word of the Lord? Let it come. That's people challenging Jeremiah, mocking him and saying, where's the destruction of Jerusalem? Let it come. We don't care. Jeremiah 20, verse 7. You deceived me, Lord, and I was deceived. You seized me and prevailed. I am a laughingstock all the time. Everyone ridicules me. I think Jeremiah is complaining a little bit, saying he was deceived about, I guess he thought his words were going to be received and understood, but they weren't. Everybody laughs at Jeremiah and ridicules him. Zephaniah 1:12, and at that time I will search Jerusalem with lamps and punish the men who settle down comfortably, who say to themselves, the Lord will not do good or evil. In other words, the Lord's not going to do anything. Just keep living our lives. So wherever there's good prophecy, there's always false prophecy. You can count on it. And of course, cessationists will look at the false prophecy and say, see there, there's no good prophecy. That is an erroneous procedure, in my humble opinion. We go now to Ezekiel 12, verses 26 through 28, and we will finish this chapter. The word of the Lord came to me. Ezekiel's having a lot of words here in this chapter. Son of man, the house of Israel is saying the vision he sees is for many years from now, and he prophesies about the distant future. Ah, so some of the people thought that the prophecies were never going to take place. Where's the vision? What's happening here? It never happens. And apparently these people are acknowledging that, yes, he might be speaking the truth, but I don't need to worry about that. That's a long time in the future. Kind of like people today don't ever worry about dying. They think, oh, that's a long time from now. Next thing you know, they're dead. Verse 28, God continues, therefore say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says, none of my words will be delayed any longer. Whatever I say will be fulfilled, declares the sovereign Lord. Now, in verse 27, it's the house of Israel who's saying the vision is for many years in the future. Would that be the Jews in Babylon, the Jews in Judah? Probably both, the Jews in Babylon and the Jews in Judah. Once again, not believing the prophets. If there's one thing we can take from this chapter, is you need to listen to the Word of God. If you don't listen to the Word of God, you will pay a horrible price, because it is a terrible thing to fall into the hands of a consuming fire that is God. A terrible thing. You don't have to do that. Just listen to what God says. Well, with that admonishment, we are now finished with Ezekiel 12, and we are prepared in our next audio to go to Ezekiel 13, which I will entitle False Prophets Condemned. We've mentioned the false prophets in chapter 12, and now we're going to see them condemned by God in the next chapter. I hope you stay tuned for that discussion, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.